Good morning, everybody. Yeah, full house. That's great. This meeting is called to order April 1st, 2010 at, gosh, we're pretty close to 9:04 a.m. Before proceeding with any business, I believe Mr. Smith has a statement to make. Mr. Smith.
I do, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. A public notice of this meeting containing all items on the proposed agenda has been filed in the office of the Secretary of State as required by Chapter 551 Government Code, referred to as the Open Meetings Act. I would like for this fact to be noted in the official record of this meeting. Also, I just want to welcome everybody here. Delighted particularly to see all of the family and friends that have come in to celebrate the service awards and retirements of our colleagues, and we're going to kick off the meeting with that and look forward to celebrating all of their many contributions to this great agency. We've got a number of others of you that are here for kind of the business meeting afterwards, and just as a quick reminder to those of you who have not been here before, would ask that you please just kind of silence or turn off your cell phones or Blackberries and PDAs. Thanks for everybody for reaching for them and checking. Also, if you wish to speak to the commission on any particular action item as it comes up in the meeting, please sign up outside. At the appropriate time, Chairman Holt will call you by name and ask you to come forward. You'll have 3 minutes to respectfully address the commission. We've got a little green light, red light system. Green light means go, and red light means the 3 minutes are up. And so try to keep it pithy. And again, appreciate you joining us for the meeting. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm done.
Keep it what?
Succinct. Yeah.
Boy, I tell you what, I'm going to have to look that one up. Approval of the minutes from the previous meeting, which have already been distributed. Do I have a motion?
Sorry,
Commissioner Hickson and Commissioner Friedkin second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you. Okay, next is the acknowledgement of the donations list, which has been distributed. Do I have a motion? Commissioner Morian, second. Commissioner Bivens, thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And again, on the donations, just so you let kind of our general public know, literally daily, we get lots of help, donations, all kinds of things, not just for law enforcement, but for all throughout the Texas Parks and Wildlife organization. We have lots of friends that support us, support the parks, and I just want to thank all those that give on a continual basis. It's been a wonderful, wonderful thing over the many years. And then next, one of my favorites, for service awards and special recognitions. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission. One of the things that I think we failed to do yesterday during the committee meetings, but I want to make sure that we have a chance to do today for the Thursday meeting, is to recognize our new Coastal Fisheries Division Director, Robin Rikers. And so Robin was recently named as our Division Director. He needs no introduction, been with us for a little over 20 years, heading up all of our science and policy, and rose to the top in a very competitive process, and we're very proud to have Robin leading our new team. So just want to acknowledge Robin. So Robin, welcome. Some of you may know that this month we are having a big push to see if an angler in Texas can catch the 500th Toyota Share Alunker. And as you will recall, that's any bass over 13 pounds. We'll collect those, take them to the Freshwater Fishery Center, and use them for spawning purposes to go back and restock and improve genetics in our lakes and reservoirs across the state. We have seven more to go before we reach the magic 500. The angler that catches the 500 Toyota Share Alunker will be given a cash prize of $500 per pound on that, so a little incentive. So it comes as no surprise that Phil DeRocher has retired in time to go fishing, I want to say.
He knows where it is.
he stocked every fish in the state. It's I don't need to introduce Phil to y'all. Phil has been with this agency for 35 years, and in 1993, took the helm of our Inland Fisheries Division, working with an extraordinary team, really built a world-class sport fishery in our state lakes, put in the minimum 14-inch size limit for bass, made that one of the most sought-after game fish in all of the country, very instrumental in getting the freshwater fish stamp and getting our fishermen to invest in our hatchery work. Really worked very hard to get the Freshwater Fisheries Center established there in Athens. Led some pioneering efforts to get the National Fish Habitat Action Plan established, and has just been a real national leader in fisheries conservation. And so, Phil DeRocher, today we're celebrating 35 years with this agency. Phil, please come forward.
Get to go enjoy the fruits of all your hard labor.
In the early 90s, I came to work for this agency as an intern, and on my first day at work, Bob Cook told me that I had to show up in a coat and tie, and I was sitting in my little cubicle, and this gentleman walked by and kind of did a double take, and he said, "Well, who are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm Carter Smith," and he said, "Well, you look like a banker," and I said, No, sir, I'm just an intern." It was Vernon Bevel, who had recently started, who no one will confuse as a banker. But a biologist he is. And Vernon has given 40 years of his life to the career of wildlife conservation. Started off as a turkey biologist there in South Carolina. Went on to be executive director there in Mississippi and North Carolina, came to Texas to head up the migratory game bird program, ultimately took over responsibility for all of the game bird programs in Texas, been a strong advocate for making sure that we're surveying and listening to the hunting public and doing regular surveys to assess their desires and preferences and satisfaction, represented us very well on all the migratory bird flyway councils, very involved in making sure that we implemented new stocking practices with eastern turkeys in East Texas, and most recently has made sure that we are working hard to complete the upland game bird and migratory game bird strategic plans that we talked about yesterday. And so Vernon Bevel's enjoyed 17 fine years with this agency, and so Vernon Bevel's retiring. Vernon?
Thank you, sir. Appreciate
it. 30 years ago, Audie Nelson went through the Texas Game Warden Academy, and like most graduated cadets at the time, he was assigned to the coast there at Rockport and spent a dozen years on the coast representing this agency very well. Ultimately moved to San Antonio, where he worked his way up to lieutenant, did a stint in Temple, and then was promoted to captain to oversee all of our law enforcement district operations there in the LaGrange and Bastrop area. Audie is a very, very bright individual. He heads up all of the technology initiatives for the law enforcement division. Some of you recall, I know Chairman Holt will, when we were pushing hard to get that in-vehicle automation equipment in our law enforcement cars to make sure we had the same kind of equipment as DPS and other major law enforcement agencies, and asking for that support. We had a pilot project, and Audie ran that and ran that very well. And so very, very pleased today to celebrate his 30 years of service, Audie Nelson. He's not retiring. We're just celebrating his time here. So, Audie, please come forward.
Thank you.
Got it?
Right.
All right. Thanks, Hardy.
Right.
Yeah.
Well
done. Yeah.
Well, it's now my privilege to introduce one of Audie's classmates that some of you, particularly in South Texas, know well, Al Vielma. Al is a native of the border country around Del Rio and grew up there, went to the Game Warden Academy, and then immediately found himself in Texas City, of all places, to work on behalf of the department for 4 years, and then went back to his beloved home ground there in Val Verde County, stationed there in God's country out in Comstock, and represented the agency there, ultimately moved over to San Antonio and worked his way up from sergeant to lieutenant to captain, and now he is our proud major of the South Texas Brush Country and oversees that swath of Texas, including the border and all of the lakes and river stuff there along our border with Mexico. And so today, 30 years with this agency, Major Al Vielma. Al.
I'm on TV. We know we're well protected.
Our next colleague that I have the privilege to acknowledge today has been with us for 25 years, and Eric Young started out over in Palacios as a seasonal at our Periyar Bass Marine Fisheries Center, a place where we're doing great research on genetics and fish propagation techniques and really improving the way that we are managing and stocking fish in our bays and estuaries. And came on almost immediately after full-time. He's been with us for 25 years there in Palacios at the Periyar Bass Center, also given very generously of his time, not only as an employee and colleague, but also volunteering to help the Buffalo Soldiers program, which is a wonderful historical and education outreach program that tells the great story of Buffalo Soldiers in this state. And so my great privilege today to recognize Eric Young, 25 years of service. Eric. Well, I first got introduced to Lydia Saldana, like most Austinites, watching her on TV as the news lady around Austin, and much to my surprise to come to the agency as an intern and seeing Lydia there heading up all of our video programs there. And as you know, she's just done an extraordinary job as she was named our division director back in 1996, has built really, I think, the premier communications and information and outreach program in all of the country with all of the mixed media that her team uses. And she's done a great job in leading from video production, TV, radio, a world-class magazine. She's helped lead the way with our involvement in all of the new social media techniques. She's taken it as her sort of personal responsibility to make sure that she has time with almost every single Parks and Wildlife colleague to make sure that they hear from her about the best way to be an ambassador for this agency, and personally coached and taught many of us on the best way to communicate publicly. And started her job at Parks and Wildlife. She'd never hunted. She'd never fished. She'd never been to a state park, and she's our leading ambassador now. Lydia Saldana has been with us for 20 years. Lydia.
Yeah. We all said that.
Got the skinny ones on.
Yeah, right.
In our state parks, literally where the rubber hits the road, you'll find our park rangers. They are literally the Jackson Jills of all trades. They are working with park visitors. They're making sure our trails and our roads are well maintained. They're doing like carpentry equipment. Essentially, every single thing that needs to be done in a state park, you find our park rangers right there, front and center, representing this agency. And today, we're going to celebrate 20 years with Lewis Duncan, who was hired there initially at Bisher State Park, right next to Bastrop there, the Lost Pines country, just east of us. Just done an extraordinary job over his 20-year with the department, and very, very proud to recognize him for 20 years. Lewis Duncan. Lewis. You know, we talk a lot about the Battleship Texas with the commission, and most of it has to do with issues surrounding the dry berthing of that ship. And I guess what I'd like to ask of all of you sometime is to take a chance to visit that ship. It is just a spectacular World War I era dreadnought, and one of the things that makes it so interesting and unique, like all of our facilities are, the people that work there are absolutely passionate about that ship, and they can tell its history and doing an extraordinary job of maintaining that ship on the interior side and the exterior side. And today we're going to recognize a couple of colleagues, but first, Norman Snipe, who's been with us for 20 years. He was a welder and fabricator over at Todd Shipyards. You know, the first time we went and dry berthed that ship for some work, fell in love with the ship and got a temporary job working for us on the battleship. That's become permanent. Just been a great colleague at the agency. Also gives back very generously to the community as a coach for Special Olympics. And so Norman Snipe, 20 years of service, Texas Parks and Wildlife. Norman. Last year we celebrated our 25th anniversary of Brazos Bend State Park, and that is an extraordinary place as well. If you haven't had a chance to visit that near Houston, really a interesting, unique area. And our office manager over there, Susanna Taylor, has been with us 20 years, and she likes to tell the story. She started as a fee collector, a little bit like Lydia. Didn't have a lot of experience in the outdoors, and her first day on the job, some birders apparently came in and asked her when the spoonbills were going to be arriving. So she looked through the campground log and looked to see when they were going to come, said, well, I don't think they've checked in yet. When do you expect them? You're a good sport, Suzanne. She has worked her way up to be our office manager there, and I don't tell y'all how important those jobs are in making sure that all the administration and operation run smoothly, and I know Steve, our superintendent there, will attest to that. And so really, really proud of Susanna. 20 years of service. Susanna. Last but not least on our service award recognitions is George Templin. And George also has a similar story to tell with his love affair with Battleship Texas. He too worked at Todd Shipyards, and when the shipyards went through a reduction in force, we were incredibly, incredibly fortunate to pick up George and his skills. He worked at the battleship. He worked on our force account and infrastructure out of a team of maintenance and construction specialists that kind of rove around the state to work on a variety of projects. The shipyards tried to call him back several times, and fortunately he said he wanted to make Parks and Wildlife his home. Not only has he done that, but his son Jordan, who's 21 years of age, is now working for this agency. And so we're really proud to have a father-son team. George Templin, 20 years of service. George. I think all of you know that we've got a great partnership in this state with the National Wild Turkey Federation, an organization that's doing really, really important upland game bird habitat conservation, working very diligently to restore turkey populations in the state, making sure that we've got ample hunting opportunities for our outdoor enthusiasts. And each year they name a law enforcement officer of the year, and could not be more proud of the fact that this year's awardee is our very own Cody Hatfield. And Cody graduated from the academy back in 2003, stationed there in Rock Springs, recently moved over to Mason, most fittingly with his son named Mason, by the way. So, and in a very short period of time, Cody has really distinguished himself as just an absolutely exemplary investigator. Y'all will remember the discussion yesterday on the significance of the Lacey Act and the important use of that tool as we work to combat the illegal transportation of deer across state lines to protect our deer herd. And Cody was responsible for really launching the very first Lacey Act investigation in Texas on a case in Edwards County. Saw that through to fruition, been involved in other deer breeding violations, participated in a major initiative, Operation Texas Shuffle. Last couple of years, I mean, just last year alone, he investigated, you know, almost 200 Parks and Wildlife Code violations. He's out there in the field. He's also very active in the community, looking for ways to get kids and families into the outdoors. But he also gives back to our cadets and our incoming wardens and helping to teach them in the appropriate use of force use options and training them how to respond to different situations and what level of force to use. And we're very proud of the fact that Cody this year is named our Officer of the Year by the National Wild Turkey Federation. And with us today to present that award is Bob Linder. And Bob, very involved in the leadership of the National Wild Turkey Federation, great friend of this agency, and so I'm going to ask Bob to come forward and present this award. Bob.
Thanks, Cardi. Chairman Holt, will you go ahead and bring that to me?
Sure, absolutely. Bob, you want to vote or do that?
No, I just don't want to hold it because I can't. This will be the only chance I get. This is a very special moment in that it, to honor an individual is one thing, is exciting and is wonderful as Cody is and the job that he does, but it gives me an opportunity to say to you all that the National Wild Turkey Federation looks upon this not only as an individual award, but as a award of relationship that we have with Texas Parks and Wildlife, partnering in wildlife, and the contributions that we feel that Texas Parks and Wildlife makes to the National Wild Turkey Federation, and we try to reciprocate and help in every way we can, Carter agencies and whatever. And I get a chance to serve on that Upland Game Bird Commission and all that, and it's great. But this was also a unique year because not only was Cody recognized, but the National Wild Turkey Federation decided that they would send the supervising officer to the National Convention with Cody. So Kevin Davis got to go with him, captain. And so we didn't honor Kevin, but he got a chance to go and have a wonderful time at Opryland in Nashville, Tennessee. And so all I can say as I hand this and we get our picture taken, I'm assuming, is that whatever happened at Opryland in Nashville will stay there. We had a great time. Come on. Wait a minute, it feels like I'm being honored.
Right, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Commissioners, that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Most people are clearing out. I think we have a class coming in. Is that correct? Texas A&M? Good. We'll wait for them to come in. Okay. I know, we were talking about that last night. We're going to figure out some way not to. Oops, come on.
Thank you.
I understand. Welcome, everybody, and I particularly want to welcome Professor Slack. Did I see? Hey, good to see you again. And your class. Would your class please stand up? Welcome to your class. We appreciate you all coming. Yeah, glad you're here. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. We're going to ask each one of you to come up and speak for 3 minutes. So please be ready. But no, thank you for your interest and thank you for coming over, Professor. I appreciate you bringing your class both yesterday and today. And you all were smart yesterday. You got out of here in time. We didn't get out till 5:30. So, and you didn't miss much, to be blunt with you. So, but I do appreciate you coming back. First order of business, item one, action approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion? Commissioner Falcone, second Commissioner Hughes, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Item number two, action proposed rule review of Chapter 58, Oysters and Shrimp. Ms. Ann Bright, please.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Ann Bright, General Counsel. As many of you know, every 4 years we're required by the Texas Administrative Code to review all of our rules. The review has to include an assessment as to whether the reasons for initially adopting the rules continue to exist. In January, the Commission authorized us to start this project for Chapter 58, which concerns oysters and shrimp. We published that notice in the Texas Register. The regulations after the review can either be adopted, readopted, adopted with changes, or repealed based on the review. We completed the review after publishing notice in the Texas Register. We received no comments from the public on this, and staff is not recommending any changes as a result of the review. Therefore, we're recommending the following motion. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopts the completed rule review and readopts without changes Chapter 58, Oysters and Shrimp, Texas Parks and Wildlife Department Rules in Title 31, Part 2 of the Texas Administrative Code, is published in the Texas Register on February 12, 2010. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I'm saving it.
Any questions for Ann? Have one speaker
who would
like to speak on this. Chris Robin,
please
come up.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I think I would like to speak to the next agenda item, if you will.
Sure. I'm sorry. I had you down to Ocean Reward Direct, but not whatever.
Is that okay? All right. Thank you.
I will call you up for that. Any questions, Grant? Very straightforward, thank you. This is an action item. Do I have a motion to approve? So moved. Commissioner Hickson, second. Mr. Friedkin, all in favor? Thank you. Item number three, action 2010-2011 statewide hunting and fishing proclamation. Again.
Morning, Commissioners. My name is Ken Krasowski with the Inland Fisheries Division, and today I will be reviewing with you the proposals to the changes in fishing regulations. These changes pertain to both fresh and salt water, and these are the proposals we presented to you in January, took to public hearings, and now coming back to you to review them and update you with the public comments. Starting out, we have some changes to the commercial fishing reporting requirements. We wish to strengthen the reporting requirements to ensure that reports are submitted for all freshwater and saltwater commercial fishing activities. Licensed fish dealers are required to file a monthly report of their sales, but there is no provision for which commercial fishermen, if when they transfer a catch to persons other than licensed fish dealers, to report. We wish to collect harvest information from those commercial fishermen when they sell their catch to someone other than a licensed fish dealer, so we will strengthen those reporting requirements. The next proposal is to create a separate fishing proclamations. We are proposing to transfer the fishing regulations from the statewide hunting and fishing proclamation. We'll create separate proclamations for both the recreational and commercial fishing. We're not making any changes to these rules. We're just reorganizing them. There's some advantage to that. A little easier to find the rules for fishing, and also there's a few different reporting requirements for on the commercial ones. Separating that out would have some administrative advantages. And finally, we're making a minor change to the rules on possession of fish. We want to clarify some wording in the statewide hunting and fishing proclamation. These rules could lead to some angler confusion. We haven't had any problems with that. Something our staff has noticed, and we've gotten a few comments on, and we wish to clarify that to make sure that our bag and possession limits and length limits can be clearly understood. Currently, this is the language. Most of the problem or the concern we had there was pointed out was some of the language talking about attempting to take fish within a protected lake limit, which wasn't our intent of that rule. We are proposing to just separate those clauses into two separate sections, which would clarify the meaning there and make that more easily understood. To summarize the comments on that, we didn't receive any comments at any of the public hearings. All the comments were from the web. Most of the comments were in support. The one comment opposing it was actually commenting on some rules that we weren't changing, so it wasn't germane to our proposals. Those are all I have to present, and based on this information, we staff will recommend that you consider the proposals as written for adoption. Yes, Mitchell.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. For the record, my name is Mitch Lockwood. I'm the Whitetail Deer Program Leader and Interim Big Game Program Director. As we discussed in January and again yesterday at the Regulations Committee meeting, we have proposed some additional mule deer hunting opportunities in the state. In Wheeler County, up there in the northeast part of the panhandle, we currently have no open season for mule deer, and we have proposed a 16-day season there. In Dawson County, to the southwest, we have no open mule deer season, and we proposed a 9-day season there. And then in the Trans-Pecos, we have proposed to add one day of mule deer hunting on the front end of that season, meaning that season would now begin, if this is adopted, would begin the Friday immediately following Thanksgiving and continue for 17 days. So again, that's adding one additional day to mule deer hunting in the Trans-Pecos. We have received 24 comments for the Dawson County proposal, 23 of those in favor of this proposal. We've received 24 comments for the Wheeler County proposal, 22 of which were in favor. And we've received 28 comments for the Trans-Pecos mule deer proposal, 27 in favor. As I mentioned yesterday, none of those who showed opposition to this gave any explanation or reasoning as why they opposed this proposal. So with that, staff recommends this motion before you. Again, as Ken stated, this motion is to adopt the entire, all proposals included in the statewide hunting and fishing proclamation. With that, I'll be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for Mitch from the commission? We do have a couple of speakers who would like to speak. Chris Robbins and then Kirby Brown.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, commissioners. Sorry for the confusion earlier. Chalk it up to April Fool's Day. I'm here on behalf of the Ocean Conservancy, and I would just like to say a few words in support of the proposed commercial fisherman harvest report. This is going to close a gap in fisheries data collection reporting in the state by having fishermen report their transactions to non-licensed buyers, and this is very important for data collection purposes and making sure that managers have all the data necessary to monitor catch limits against quotas, and scientists can better assess the pressure of fishing on wild stocks, etc. This is also a very timely rule in that it contributes to a broader cooperative effort between state and federal partnering agencies. And there may be times in the future when TPW comes back with additional proposed changes to its fisheries data collection reporting system that will better help it integrate its system across partnering agencies at the state and federal level. And so we would ask that that you consider these changes and approve these changes at the future appropriate time. So thank you very much for your attention to these issues.
Good morning.
Do you have an April Fool's joke?
No, I'm not going to do that to you guys. But I will tell you that I am here today in order to make sure that Vernon Bevel really did retire this time and congratulate he and my good friend Phil DeRocher on their great careers and the wonderful work they've done for wildlife and conservation.
Yeah, we're going to miss both of them. And then, of course, I love that tie that Vernon had on today.
And
I don't know if you got to see
always
it.
Spectacular.
It was quite a tie.
Always spectacular. Again, for the record, my name's Kirby Brown with Texas Wildlife Association. Our members are landowners, hunters, and conservationists who own or control almost 40 million acres in Texas. We just want to comment that we support the staff proposal on the statewide regulations and, of course, are particularly interested in the additional mule deer hunting opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kirby. Any questions for Kirby? Great. Thank you. That's all we had to speak. This is an action item. Do I have a motion for approval? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, sir. And you'll have to help us here. We've got the legal beagle up here who's changing things.
Well, thanks to some quick research by David Sinclair, the definition that's here is, as I was discussing with Commissioner Duggins, actually comes from the Code of Federal Register that we use for migratory game birds. We could change to domicile. I mean, I think that sort of the meaning for the ordinary member of the public is not going to be significant, but I agree with Commissioner Duggins that there's a whole body of law on what is the meaning of a domicile.
Well, we don't have to go back out to public commentary.
I don't
we
believe
can vote
so.
on the recommendation as recommended.
This section is already open. I think this is probably a logical outgrowth of the rule as proposed.
Okay.
That's one comment. And I have a question on 135 where we talk about the snapper.
Number 4 and then an asterisk. What does the asterisk refer to? You did stay up late last night, yeah? 135, he said. The asterisk.
At least on, my name's Ken Krasowski. I think it follows the table, follows the special, denotes a special regulation, red snapper to be taken. Using pole and line, but unlawful, any other kind of circle hook. Is that correct?
Yes. I'm sorry, could you say again? This is my fault.
If you follow to the next page, I believe it's on the next page, there's the asterisk, and it has the special regulation about use of circle hooks.
Okay.
That's what that refers to.
You're sharp-eyed. Wow. Pretty good.
With that change to the definition of definition 20 for time,
Okay. Commissioner Duggins, do I have a second? Commissioner Friedkin, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
By the way, Commissioner Friedkin said he had caught that too, so he appreciated you speaking out about that. We're supposed to be impressing that class out there of professionalism. Item number four, a briefing survey of Wildlife Division cooperators. Ms. Linda Campbell. Linda.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. My name is Linda Campbell. I'm the Program Director for the Private Lands and Public Hunting Program in the Wildlife Division. And I'm here today to brief you on the results of the survey of our landowner cooperators.
Can you, yeah, just a little bit more. Thanks, Linda.
There we go. First, I'd like to provide some background on the importance of our private lands assistance program. TPWD has been providing habitat management assistance to landowners since the 1970s. It's been a very successful program, and we feel the most effective way to achieve on-the-ground habitat management in a private land state. As of this February, we have about 6,500 active wildlife management plans on nearly 26 million acres statewide. The 2010 Land and Water Conservation Plan identifies a deliverable of 26 million acres under plan by 2011, so we're almost there. Although we have seen great success and growth in the demand for our services, we know that our landowner constituents are changing, and we need to understand better how to provide the services they need to accomplish their conservation goals. I would like to present to you today the results of a survey developed by a 2008 Natural Leaders team. Members of that team were John Taylor in Inland Fisheries, Billy Tarrant in Wildlife, Alan Teague, Law Enforcement, and Karen Blizzard in Communications. The team developed this survey instrument with assistance from the Wildlife Division field staff and landowners. So why is this important to us? We know that changing demographics necessitates a better understanding of how the current services meet the needs of our landowners. Also, since we have limited staff and financial resources, we need to use a focused approach to providing services that really result in on-the-ground conservation.
Linda, sorry, I should. On the changing demographics, are you going to define what you mean by that? Help me understand that a little bit.
Well, changing demographics meaning that we have more newer landowners, the newer type landowners, less traditional.
Okay.
We still work with traditional, but we have many different, a diverse group of landowners that we now work with, and that's where we're talking about.
City farmers, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, kind of. And you'll see that in the results here in just a minute, too. And so evaluating the level of satisfaction for current services will help us to be more effective in meeting the needs and expectations of the landowners we work with today. So the objectives of this survey were to assess landownership attributes, to better understand the services used and the level of satisfaction with these services, and to find out if landowners are implementing the recommendations we're providing, and if not, what are their barriers. We surveyed all active cooperators in our TWIMS database. A total of 5,289 surveys were mailed, and we had a 45% return rate, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
We used the Dillman method, which is a standard survey technique with three mailings and one postcard reminder. The majority of respondents were landowners, but 11% were agents or managers. Half had owned their land for 12 years or less, and the majority, about 67% of respondents, did not live on the land being managed. The majority had received assistance from TPWD for 5 years or less, with 90% of them receiving services for 14 years or less. This map shows the average property size of our current cooperators in the various regions of the state. We asked them their reasons for owning the land they managed with TPWD assistance, Nearly 70% were managing land for non-revenue hunting, followed by weekend retreat, non-hunting wildlife recreation, agriculture, revenue-producing hunting, and retirement. Less than 10% of respondents own land for timber, for investment, or for future development. We wanted to know their reasons for seeking assistance from TPWD. Nearly 70% wanted assistance in developing a wildlife management plan or were seeking advice and guidance on wildlife management. A little over 60% were seeking assistance associated with the Managed Lands Deer Program. When asked about their management goals, 87% of respondents identified deer quality management as their primary goal. Nearly 80% were managing for a diversity of wildlife. And 58% wanted to improve hunting opportunities for other game species, such, primarily upland game birds. Wildlife recreation, other than hunting, was the primary goal of 44% of our respondents. Only 29% identified income through hunting as their primary management goal. We asked about their primary species of interest. Over 80% of respondents identified big game as their primary interest, followed by upland game birds at about 60%. About 65% were interested in other species, and when we looked at the data, most of these respondents identified feral hogs, exotic wildlife, and fishing as other interests. We wanted to know the importance of our planning and technical guidance services that we offer and their level of satisfaction with these services. Wildlife management planning, habitat management recommendations, and guidance on deer management were very important to over 70% of the respondents. The majority were very satisfied with these services. We also ask about their use and level of satisfaction with TPWD permitting services. And of those who used or were familiar with these permitting services, the Managed Lands Deer Permit was very important to over 70% of respondents, whereas the Deer Management Antlerless Spike Deer Control Permits were very important to 30 to 40% of those who had used or were familiar with these permit services. 20 to 40% of respondents had not used or were not familiar with the various permits other than the Managed Land Deer. Of those who had used these permitting services, the highest levels of satisfaction were for the Managed Land Deer, Antlerless Control, Antlerless Deer Control, Deer Management, and the Landowner Assisted Permit Management Permits. We wanted to know how many of the recommended management practices had been implemented by our cooperators. 48% of respondents had fully implemented the recommended practices, and 44% had implemented at least some of the practices that were recommended to them. Only 2% either have not or do not intend to implement the practices recommended to them. We wanted to know and understand better any barriers to implementation. By far, the barrier named most frequently was weather. The large other category that you see here surprised us, and when we looked at what people were writing in for other, the overwhelming response was drought and lack of rain.
Weather.
Please recall that the survey was administered during the summer of 2009. At the end of a serious two-year drought that affected most of the state. So this is what was on their mind. We wanted to know if their management goals had changed since working with TPWD. Most said no, but 19% reported that their goals had changed as a result of TPWD assistance. We asked them if TPWD services were effectively meeting their needs. 96% of them reported that their needs were being met acceptably, while 63% agreed that the assistance they received met their needs very well. When asked how satisfied they were with the assistance received from their biologist, 98% were satisfied. 17% were satisfied but would welcome more one-on-one assistance, and 8% were satisfied but wanted more follow-up assistance. So about a quarter of the people we currently work with want more time with our with their biologist. Finally, we wanted to know others who are important in providing management services, and the top ones were at 30%. They were receiving assistance from USDA, Natural Resources Conservation Service, and about 17% from AgriLife Extension. Thank you for this opportunity to present, and I'll answer any questions that you may have at this time.
You said your return was about 45%?
45%, yes.
That's pretty high. Any questions or comments for Linda? Yes, sir.
I've got one.
Mark, sorry. Commissioner Bennett.
Do you know how many acres we have signed up in MLDP programs to date?
Mitch is here. I'm going to ask Mitch Lockwood to help me out with that, if that's all right, Commissioner.
My name is Mitch Lockwood. I'm Whitetail Deer Program Leader. For this season that we just ended, for MLDP, including all levels 1, 2, and 3, and mule deer MLDP, we issued to just over 7,000 sites this year, and that totaled, almost 17 million acres. Now, about 5 million of those acres are for mule deer MLDP, which covers 171 sites, so approximately 12 million acres for the whitetail MLDP, all three levels.
That's incredible. I appreciate that number. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And with this kind of satisfaction, showing a survey, we'll get more and more people signed up. Commissioner Duggan, sir.
I think 45% is good, but I'm puzzled by why, despite two follow-ups, they allowed to the 900 people that were in nearly 2,900 cooperatives. Do we have an idea of why they're not responding where it's supposed to be a cooperative arrangement, number one, and number two, are there any regional differences among those who apparently refuse to do it?
Well, as I understand it from other Human Dimensions work that we have done and others have done, 45% is really pretty good as a response. It's just getting people to fill it out and send it back in. Now, we did do regional breakdowns of this, and we're working to do more of that because we're trying to look at the data by region so that our district leaders in all eight of the various districts have this to look at for their particular district.
And what I'm asking on that second question is, among those who did not respond, was it disproportionately in South Texas, East Texas, where I'm just asking about?
Yes, sir.
Non-respondents, did we look at where they were?
We have not done that yet, but we will. We are doing additional data analysis on this. These are the basic preliminary, but we should do that. Yes, sir.
And
we
is there a way that the next time we have communications with these 2,900 or so people where they come to us for services, the first question out is, why did you answer this? Is it important to us? It's helpful to the whole process.
We could certainly look at that as we do a non-response follow-up. That's a good idea.
Encourage us to try to find a way to do that so that they appreciate the importance of the data.
Right.
The overall process.
Right. Yes, sir.
Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Have you sent in your U.S. Census? We could go out and hire 1,500,000 people, and then we could get that response back. I like to tease the commissioner. Linda, thank you. This is wonderful, and I know you are going to break it down more. So maybe I don't know if there's any information to kind of really change it. Please come back to us, okay?
Thank you.
Because this is something we're certainly emphasizing. Thank you. No vote on that. Another briefing on land conservation strategy for East Texas. Mr. Nathan Garner and Ted Hollingsworth.
Chairman, commission members, for the record, my name is Nathan Garner, Regional Wildlife Director, and for East Texas, headquartered in Tyler, Texas. I'm here today to brief the commission on the efforts of the department to respond to unprecedented conservation and outdoor recreation opportunities in the Piney Woods ecoregion of East Texas. Significant changes in land ownership patterns have recently occurred in East Texas. Forest product companies such as International Paper, Louisiana Pacific, Champion, Kirby, Weyerhaeuser, Temple Inland, and others have sold off a combined estimated 2.5 million acres since 2000 to various investment groups. And these are represented on all the shaded areas there on the map in Texas there. These represent the largest remaining private tracts of forest lands in East Texas. The Campbell Group, for example, represents one such investment group with land shaded in green here that the department is talking with on this issue. There are reasons for concern. Not only the significant changes in ownership in a relatively short amount of time over such a large area, but also further fragmentation that is coming as investment groups divide and sell forested lands. Also, the potential reduction in hunting and other outdoor recreation opportunity that hundreds of hunt clubs and hunt groups currently enjoy on a lease basis, and overall decline of forest-dependent wildlife and habitat diversity. This area is also experiencing the return of black bears moving in naturally from adjoining states. This issue was well covered as the feature item in our own magazine 9 months ago in June of 2009 in an article titled Saving a Piney Paradise, written by Henry Chappell. The article provides historic details of facts and events since 1836 that have gotten us here today in terms of the past, present, and possible future of these forests. These forests also lie within a relatively short distance from major growing cities such as Houston and the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. The conservation and recreation opportunities are significant given this geography. It is an area of the state where national forests exist, along with the Big Thicket National Preserve, federal refuges, state wildlife management areas and state parks, multiple reservoirs, private land management, that all attract the public for a multitude of outdoor recreation purposes. And in this mix, there is a growing interest in what will happen to these large private forest lands. One extremely useful tool that we have now available is the new Texas Ecosystem Classification Database that has provided detailed habitat maps that will help us determine which forested tracts have the highest wildlife habitat and conservation values. There's also a growing interest by federal partners in the vicinity, such as the U.S. National Forest and Grasslands of Texas, the Big Thicket National Preserve, on the future of these surrounding private forests. The department organized a first-of-a-kind meeting near Hawkins, Texas, on January 20th, 2010. 9 organizations were represented, including the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. National Forest and Grasslands, Texas Forest Service, Big Thicket National Preserve, the Campbell Group, the Conservation Fund, the Nature Conservancy, the Trust for Public Land, and our department. The major focus of the meeting was how Parks and Wildlife could work more closely with partners for land conservation in East Texas, given these unprecedented opportunities. This meeting was a beginning and will result in a next step of ideas and approaches for working better together in the future. A second meeting will take place in the next few months that will be more issue-oriented and will begin to establish land conservation priorities and ultimately provide a list of recommendations. Thank you for your time, and I can answer any questions.
Nathan, why are the investment groups buying up so much of the land in East Texas? What investment groups are obviously buying
to try to make a return?
Well, what I've been told is that in order to diversify portfolios of various companies, universities, other groups, they've decided to invest in land and timber, and that's an economic decision, and that's an investment decision. These are teams of investment. These investment groups represent several investment entities. We refer to them as TIMOs, or timber management organizations that represent their investors.
Do they tend to be, from what you've seen, because as you said, this has all happened very rapidly, I mean, are they cooperative? I mean, do they want to manage in a, what would be the right term, appropriate manner, I guess?
Chairman, they are managing a lot of this 2.5 million acres is being managed for timber production, timber mm-hmm. management, timber harvest. Obviously, a lot of the people in the conservation community want to see it remain in forest, some type of sustainable forest. And so forth, and I think that so it is being managed. These forests are being managed, but we expect over the next 10 or 20 years, depending on markets and economic conditions and so forth, these investment groups are going to start even selling off some of these lands that they bought from the timber companies.
Sure.
And we expect further dividing and fragmentation as a result, and so we're in a unique position now to maybe look at some of the higher priority areas and see what we can do working with these investment groups, if they're interested in conservation at all, to see what the opportunities are.
What is your sense of it? I'm asking your opinion. And
well, so far, I guess one light at the end of the tunnel so far, or at least at the beginning of the tunnel, is the Campbell Group, which you saw some of their holdings here on the earlier slide. They're interested in pursuing conservation easements. I know they recently entered into a 10,000 acre or so conservation easement in the last several months, but they seem to be willing to talk and discuss where some of these high conservation priority areas are, and maybe they would continue to maybe own the land and manage the forest, but maybe put on a conservation easement and protect it, have some level of protection for future development and so forth.
But part of the conversations then with partners working together, as you showed here, is trying to start identifying within that 2.5 million acres, let's say, certain areas that you would like to try to protect.
Right, and explore all options using all the tools in the toolbox of conservation land management. So,
Chairman, if I could just add on to what Nathan said, and Nathan captured that very well, but just that as he described those TIMOs, they've put together 10-year funds that they've attracted institutional investors, and they are there to generate a return for those shareholders. And so anytime we can identify conservation opportunities that will bring financial resources to the table to help protect the land or to provide outdoor recreational opportunities, if it will generate a return for their shareholders, then they have unquestionably shown an interest in that. But first and foremost, they've got to generate a profit for those shareholders. And as Nathan said, the concern comes at the end of that 10-year term, what's going to happen with those lands? Will they renew the funds, or will they seek to just monetize every asset on that property? And that therein lies the concern.
Yeah, 10 years relative to a life of a forest is no time at all.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Any other questions for Nathan? Good report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I had Ted's name. Are you speaking on this at all, Ted?
Only if you ask me to.
No, it's just your name. I go by, Carol gives me this. This is how we run everything. So
I would add, though, that some of the highest value conservation lands are some of the lower value timber revenue lands. Swamps, bottomlands, bogs, really dry savannas are extremely uncommon habitat types. They don't tend to generate timber as quickly. And so we do have... In many cases, they are interested in divesting those lower production lands that happen to be higher value conservation and recreation land. So we are in active conversation with several of those TMOs and, of course, with our partners, because in many cases they can bring more resources to the table than we can. Mm-hmm. What we can do is we can sort of catalyze that conversation so that we make sure that we're leveraging our resources against each other's resources to try and take out those highest value conservation assets.
Well, I strongly support it. I'm glad you're having those meetings, as Nathan talked about, with partners, because the key is you've got to have the communication, and then education, and then hopefully support in the sense of identifying those areas. But that makes sense. And some of the areas that we'd be very interested in aren't necessarily high production areas.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Any questions for Ted? Thank you. We're going to move on to item number 6, an action item, proposed land sale, Cherokee County, 1.422 acres adjacent to the Texas State Railroad. And Ted, you're up.
Chairman, Commissioners, good morning. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This item is a second reading of a proposal to divest ourselves of a very small tract in Rusk, Texas. At one time, we acquired that tract as a part of the Texas State Railroad when that entire system was transferred to us in the 1980s, and we owned and operated it. Those lands that were transferred to us included several small tracts that contribute nothing to the operation of the Texas State Railroad. In this case, the tract is a little over an acre. It's adjacent to a neighborhood. The neighbors have been using it to divest themselves of things they're no longer interested in. The property is considered by staff to be more of a liability than an asset. The adjacent landowner has asked that we sell it to him at fair market value. He has done the homework to determine that that we do appear, in fact, to be owners. We'll transfer it with a simple quick claim deed at fair market value. Again, the tract has no operational value to us or to the Texas Railroad State Railroad Association that now owns and operates the railroad, and we are proceeding with their blessing as well. And if you, the motion before you is that the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt by resolution in Exhibit A, which you have, the provisions of this land sale in Cherokee County, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Any questions for Ted? Okay, Commissioner Falcone, second. Commissioner Hughes, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you, Ted. Item number 7, action utility easement, Polk County, Lake Livingston State Park. Ted?
Chairman, Commissioners, good morning. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. And this item is in response to a request from Sam Houston Electric Co-op for a easement across a small portion along the northern boundary of Lake Livingston State Park. They are in the process of replacing a line that will no longer carry the current required by the adjacent neighborhoods, and have evaluated routes to replace that line, have worked with our staff for about a year now to identify a route that minimizes impacts to the park and is practical for expansion of this electrical service. As you can see in this map, the line runs alongside an existing public road that dips for a short distance into the northern boundary of the state park. We would issue our standard easement, which is on a 10-year term. We would charge them based on the rate schedule that you've seen, and we would adjust those numbers in accordance with the impacts both to the aesthetics of the park and to the habitat. And the motion that staff is bringing you this morning is that the executive director will be authorized to negotiate terms and conditions under which an easement may be granted, and to grant an easement to Sam Houston Electric Cooperative for the construction of overhead electric service lines across Lake Livingston State Park. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for Ted? Yes, sir.
I want to confirm the adjustment you're seeking as it's upward.
The adjustment will be upward only. when you looked at the rate schedule a few months ago and told us to proceed, it was with the clear understanding that those are basement prices, and we adjust upward in accordance with the level of impact to our assets. Yes, sir.
Now, I do have one public person, individual, would like to comment. Is it, I don't know if it's Kobe or Cabe Murphy?
Cabe.
Okay, sure, Cabe.
Come on,
go all the way up to you.
I'm here representing Sam Houston Electric. I'll answer any questions if you have any. He described it very well.
Okay, good. Any questions for Mr. Murphy? Okay, thank you. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. I assume it's not possible to bury the line because it crosses water.
Yes, sir. It's plus people. It's an old line feeding a small. It used to be a small subdivision or a small community. Now it's grown, and we're feeding it with a single phase tap that will no longer hold the load. And it's a 590-foot span across Lake Livingston. That's our problem. The 590-foot is a long span in the utility world. But no, sir, there's no possible way. It would be countless amounts of dollars to. I mean, it's possible. It would be countless amounts of dollars to bore this electric line.
Any other questions? All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, yes, this is an action item. Do I have a motion? Commissioner Moyen and Commissioner Martin, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Great, thank you. Item number 8, an action item, acceptance of land donation, Houston County, 0.236 acres at Mission Tejas State Park. Corky Kuhlman. Corky?
Good morning. For the record, Corky Kuhlman with the Land Conservation Program. This is a donation at Mission Tejas State Park of 0.236 acres. It's along Highway 21. This slide shows us the yellow area, parcel 1, we got about a year ago. This is just a small strip of land between 21 and the boundary of the park. It's an area we wouldn't want developed, and the 0.236 acre track in green is a donation possibility. With that, staff would recommend that you adopt the following motion. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the executive director to take all necessary steps to accept a donation of 0.236 acre tract of land as an addition to Mission Tejas State Park. I'll be glad to take any questions.
Any questions for Corky? Yes, sir.
Corky, it says parcel 2 is lavender.
Parcel 2 has two rental properties on it, and the land is so cheap. I spoke with the owner, and she said that we couldn't, you know, she's generating somewhere around $1,200 a month off those two rental properties. Now, the southwestern portion of that, if you look on this map, where it says parcel 2, where the P is, there's an old forest road running through there. There is some plan for the future to maybe put the entrance to the park, build a new park headquarters, and that would be a new park road going into the park. And at that point, if that ever comes about, we would try to buy at least a portion of parcel 2. The two rent properties on that track are up towards the northeast part of that track, and to buy at least a parcel 2. And we have been in I visited with her about that, but right now she's thinking about it.
Any other questions for Corky? Okay, do I have a motion? Commissioner Hickson, second. Commissioner Bivens, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you, Corky. Item number 9, action item, land acquisition, Brazoria County, 38.5 acres at Nanny M. Stringfellow Wildlife Management Area. Corky's up again.
Again, for the record, Corky Kuhlman. This is at the Stringfellow Wildlife Management Area, 38 acres. It's a bargain price, but the seller will reserve the mineral rights with the stipulation in the deed there is no surface occupancy to retrieve or explore for those minerals. The Nanny M. Stringfellow is approximately 3,600 acres of primary hardwood river bottom, and this 38-acre track is no exception. It's the same, and it would make a nice addition to the WMA. With that, staff recommends that you adopt the motion. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the executive director to take all necessary steps to acquire a 38.5-acre tract of land as an addition to the Nanny M. Stringfellow Wildlife Management Area. And I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions? Commissioner Dodd.
Corky, you said no surface occupancy.
No surface use. Yes, sir.
Any questions? Do I have a motion? Commissioner Hughes, second. Commissioner Duggins, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Believe it or not, this may be my shortest meeting. We're adjourned. We have no other...
That's it, Mr. Chairman.
We are adjourned.